So as we look at resilience this morning, we're going to look at what it means that we could be resilient. We're going to look at some of the benefits, and we're going to look at how we can cultivate our resilience by looking at a little bit of ancient wisdom. So I'm thinking you've heard resilience, being resilient as a buzzword around the place over the last 5-10 years, maybe not that long. But there's been radio talk back, there's articles about how can we build resilience into our kids. And then at the corporate level, you might have heard your CEOs or directors suggesting that we need resilience in the corporate world as well. They say things like, we need our company to be resilient if we're going to make it through to the end of this downturn. And so it's put out there as a positive character strength that we want to seek out for ourselves. And in fact, companies have spent thousands of dollars over the last decade putting their workers into workshops and training and trying to build their resilience. And yet what we've found is that the incapacitation from burnout is still really common. You might have seen that yourself. So what does resilience mean? There's lots of definitions out there and lots of sorts of contexts, but I've summated one together for us. I've put resilience is being able to continue at peak performance or productivity in our tasks despite challenges. You want that again? So resilience is being able to continue at peak performance or productivity in our tasks despite challenges. So our resilience helps us to adapt well in the face of adversity and during times of stress. It's also that idea of being able to bounce back. So you can see from this definition that there's some positive outcomes that we can be found in cultivating our resilience. It also hints at that our resilience and our well-being are interconnected as well. For example, the research shows if you're resilient, you're less stressed, happier, more content, more purposeful, more creative, and more engaged in our work and life, and they're also more rewarding. So who doesn't want to feel whole and happier in all of our life? The science also shows that our brains don't work as effectively when we're overstressed. So we actually reach higher productivity and creativity and engagement and better performance by keeping our stress levels, keep them down. So you heard a little bit of stress is good, too much, and we don't work as well. So we'll talk a bit more about the science in Q&A. So our resilience, it comes into play when we're in the midst of struggles and setbacks and challenges and those sort of things that have come along in our life, pretty much certain of that. There's threats to job security, there's workload pressure, financial difficulties, relationship breakdown, and illnesses and so on that we're going to face. So all these things are going to happen sometime in our lives, but they needn't cause us unhealthy stress and they needn't topple our well-being. So it's about how we respond to these things. So resilient people bounce back. And they bounce back from these things and they tend to be happier, have better relationships, more life satisfaction, less hopelessness, and less anxiety and depression. That sounds great for resilient people. What about us mere mortals? So, but there is good news. It's not just an inherent quality that we can only be born with. We can cultivate it, which we're looking at today. I'm not sure about you guys. You might have already done a little bit of reading up or been sent on a workshop on building your resilience or managing stress. Works on that, a couple of us. Cool. So there's also suggestions from Beyond Blue, and you might recall the HealthWays ABC of wellbeing, act, belong, commit. That's sort of for our Perth people. I think it's still out there in the airwaves a bit, but act, belong, commit. And in that, they suggest engaging in regular activity, having a good social network, and having meaning and purpose in life help us cope better with problems and stress. It simply makes us feel happier too. I've got a couple of their handouts, and especially one for our healthy workplace, and we can look at some of those other details in the Q&A. But we've just got a short talk this morning, and so we're going to look at one aspect, that belonging aspect, that social connection. So quoting HealthWays again, it's having a sense of belonging and good social networks which strengthen our resilience. I've also read Hugh McKay. He's an Australian author. He's a social researcher and an ethicist. And he's one example who agrees with one of these, with HealthWay's suggestions. So in this one, The Good Life, What Makes a Life Worth Living, he outlines the value of social capital. And he concludes that the good life is one which is lived with and for others rather than for ourselves. Well, we're going to turn to another teacher this morning. Our teacher is the one who wrote the Ancient Wisdom in your handouts there. So that's from the book of Ecclesiastes. And in previous sections, what he wrote before this bit is he's been looking for meaning in different aspects of life. He's looked at work before. He's looked at our riches and he's looked at power and a couple other things. And basically, he's found that they all come up empty of meaning. And this section that we're going to look at, the teacher recognises isolation in our work and he attempts to open our eyes to our fears of loneliness. And then in the second part, he points to a solution. So let's read that first half of this week's wisdom. So it's from Ecclesiastes chapter 4. I'll just read verses 7 to 8. And again I saw something meaningless under the sun. So when he talks about under the sun here, it means it's universal. It's an observation he's made and it's universal around him. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked, and why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningless, a miserable business. So our teacher here, he's describing a certain man who finds himself lonely in his work. So for him, and perhaps also for us, he doesn't have family nearby. So this might be due to circumstances which are beyond his control, such as his location, or it might be choices he's made that have left him without this support. Or like us, we could be surrounded by people, but loneliness remains. So just last year, here in this hall, we had an insurance CEO, Richard Borgonen, came out and spoke to us. And he pointed out that our office blocks, like our apartment blocks, they're full of people and we're all really close by and packed into one another, and yet there's still heaps of loneliness. It was an observation that he's made. And basically, this isolation is crushing because social isolation is toxic to our human nervous system. But back to our man in our passage. So in actual fact, his loneliness, it is within his control. If you see there, it says, he has no end to his toil. The teacher's describing him as a workaholic. And we wonder, has he made this isolation-inducing choice? We're not so sure. But in our work life, we certainly don't like to be treated as merely units of task output. And as David pointed out last week, we're more than the sum of our tasks. And as humans, we need to be seen as whole humans. We have feelings, we have families, we've got a whole life outside of our offices and factories. And indeed, at the beginning of the Bible, it tells us also that we are more than the work that we do. So we have Adam, he was given every good thing given to him. And also given to him was good, meaningful work. But then we read on that it's not good for him to be alone. So God created us with the need for sustenance with others, not self-sufficiency. Resilience is sometimes taught as it's a strength or a power that we have within us. And you might have heard Tony Robbins and his Find the Power Within mega seminars. Has anyone else but Paul been under a rock and not heard of Tony Robbins? You haven't heard of him? Okay. I thought he was a big, brash American we'd all heard of. Oh. Maybe only I listen to those motivation seminars. But anyway, his mantra is find the power within. And they have huge, huge seminars. And I received this water bottle last year. It had the power within on it as well. It's from a training club. And they were encouraging us to find the power within to meet our goals. But I've made a slight modification to that. And I'll tell you about that later. Well, I've got that. Another writer, a social psychologist, and he actually specialises in the emotional foundations of morality, but he's an agnostic. His name's Jonathan Haidt from New York. And independent of Hugh McKay, he also carried out some research looking into religion, science, ancient wisdom. And in his third book, The Righteous Mind, he recaps a little bit of something he found in his previous book. I'll read that to you. When I began writing The Happiness Hypothesis, Finding Modern Truth in Ancient Wisdom, I believed that happiness came from within, as Buddha and the Stoic philosophers have said thousands of years ago. You'll never make the world conform to your wishes, so focus on changing yourself and your desires. But by the time I finished writing, I'd changed my mind. Happiness comes from between. It comes from getting the right relationships between yourself and others, yourself and your work, and yourself and something larger than yourself. Interesting quote that I was given this week. So from that teacher, back to our teacher in Ecclesiastes. So our teacher here points out we're not completed with just our work. And it's striking that he goes from he's a workaholic. Yeah. He probably is an alcoholic as well, but he's a workaholic who's lonely, to telling us some more about otherness. Pick it up there in verse 9. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labour. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help him up. Also, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? Though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves. A cord of three strands is not quickly broken. You might have heard this passage quoted at weddings, but it actually has broader applications to friendship and even community as life-enhancing. So why does our teacher link our toil with our connections? Let's look at what verse 10 points out. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up, but pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up. The teacher's reminding our workaholic, or really all of us workers, that toils don't always go to plan. We'll all fall down. We'll need to reach out at some stage. We can be certain that life will include hard times, more often for some than for others, but basically we know that every single one of us will definitely face trials or suffering of some kind in some way. So there's hard times in life and at work, there's our difficult bosses and co-workers. There's mistakes, there's deadlines, there's redundancy. And that's when we need our family and our social network, our real social network, not that virtual one. To bounce back, we need connection. We need connection to be helped back up again. But a key thing to note at this point about our connections, we won't have the capacity to make those connections when in the midst of those struggling times. So these connections need to be made and strengthened regularly, mutually filled in those good times to be able to draw on them at the other times. But the other thing is, none of us like to have that friend who only seeks out time with us when they need us or they need something from us. Do you have one of those friends? So our resilience, our well-being, and our strength for getting through is cultivated by connection. And if we're realistic with ourselves, which is to say we're also well connected with ourselves, we admit that we're finite and we don't actually have infinite power within, as per Tony Robbins or as per my water bottle. We don't have infinite resources within us to draw on from within ourselves. We need to connect outside ourselves, where to have a good return for their labour, one helps the other when he falls down, two to keep warm, two to defend themselves. So you might be thinking, great, but from personal experience, yeah, and absolutely. you've no doubt found that these connections that we have around us are not foolproof either. So we have our workaholic who has no time for friends or marriage or children. Our friends fail us and we fail our friends. Our friends, they leave or they die. And so, yeah, we have falling outs. Our relationships struggle and they break down. And there's pain when there's this brokenness that we're part of. And indeed, it can be our relationships that cause those challenges which are difficult to bounce back from. So let me tell you about a king, another teacher, whose closest friends failed him. He not only found himself lonely, but he found himself despised and scorned. Betrayal by those closest to him was painful, but anticipated. I'm speaking of Jesus. During his lifetime, Jesus built friendships with those he was teaching. He was patient with them. He loved them. But in his darkest hours, on his way to the cross, they departed from him. Yet he was willing to die for those he loved, despite that betrayal. And prior to his death, he said to those friends gathered around him, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for his friends." Jesus is the friend who wants the best for his friends, and he also wants the best for you and for me. And he was prepared to die to ensure that we receive that best. So what's this best that he wants for us? I reckon there's a hint there in verse 12 for us. The cord of three strands is not quickly broken. The teacher's picking up that rope makers know that the strongest design for rope is three strands. And there's the other writers who write about this wisdom, and they point to the binding of us in relationship to our Creator as well as each other. And you might recall that quote from our agnostic friend Jonathan Haidt: "Happiness comes from getting the right relationships between yourself and others, yourself and your work, and yourself and something larger than yourself." So, agnostic. He might have been an atheist before that, but I think he's shifted the agnostic side there. But this is the ultimate relationship. To be able to know the one who knows us best is to be able to know the one who knows you best. St. Augustine described relationship with God as the destination and Jesus as the path which takes us there. So Jesus has made the way possible for us to have this ultimate personal relationship. He opens his arms and he carries us into the throne room of the Creator King of the universe. Now, we can't just walk into this any throne room. It's only possible, in this case, to be carried in there. So it's this connection which is our truest and deepest need in this life and the next. Jesus restores this relationship through his death. And Jesus showed this in his life as he lived and loved amongst us in relationship. He models friendship perfectly. He'll never leave or forsake you. He'll always be there for you, even when others are not. He'll always pick you up when you fall, if you let him. He will always protect your relationship with him. So no matter how many times you are not loyal to him, he'll protect the relationship with you. He'll always forgive you when you ask, and even before you ask. He demonstrated this in his own life and his death. He also empowers us to live better and stronger in our relationships with each other. So we have these accounts of Jesus' life collected from those who spent time with him, including John, who is known as the beloved disciple. And through what they record is various interactions Jesus has with people around him. And he shows himself to be the faithful friend who speaks the truth. He protects, he provides, and he comforts, and he loves. He gave up convenience and independence and his life for your sake and for me. And he took on the experience of the ultimate loneliness on the cross to bring you and me into friendship with our Creator King. And whilst on the cross, those skies, they went dark. And this was showing that the Father, his Father too, left him alone, totally alone and separated for us. He did this work to give us the abundant life found in ultimate connection with him. And in this connection, which gives potential for growth, truth, well-being and fulfillment, in this ultimate personal relationship, our greatest flourishing is found. So this morning, can I commend to you to look into the friendships in the life of Jesus for yourself? For a short read, we have these little booklets, which have a selection of readings, and it's called The Week That Changed the World. It's about Easter, because Easter changes the relationships for the world. Or, so that's snippets. This one is a complete biography of Jesus' life. Or another option where we can build our connections with a friend and with God is this one, Word One to One, and it includes extra explanation notes. And this one's from our CEO friend, Richard Borgonen, who spoke here. So to cultivate our resilience, let's draw all those threads together, our two agnostic sociologists, our ancient teacher, Jesus the teacher, our act, belong, commit, and beyond blue, and science, and here's some suggestions for your workday. So if your workplace isn't doing it already, you could suggest that they have regular morning teas where you can spend a little bit of time each other, maybe some cuppa and a bite to eat, or the idea of having sundowners together. Or we could act on what Richard Borgonen's observing. So he observed that there's lonely people in your office. So if you open your eyes, open your ears, and just look out for the clues and find those lonely people, a couple of them in your office, and invite them to have lunch together with you and get away from your desks and have lunch together, enjoy some time together. So science shows, and Beyond Blue also commends that to you, and they've shown that that will actually give you better productivity for your afternoon. So don't think that you're working harder by working through your lunch break. Take the break, take it with somebody, and enjoy that productive afternoon. And you'll also, it's a little act of kindness, you'll be improving each other's well-being. You could, should I suggest it, even have a book club style lunch break together where you have a little readings from those. So there's lots of science and physiological benefits to doing these little connecting ideas, but you can ask about that in Q&A, but that's where we're going now.